From NPR News, I'm Tony Cox. On today's show, we'll talk with Mel Watt, the new chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus, who outlines the CBC's agenda heading into the 109th Congress. Also, are doctors listening to their black patients or turning a deaf ear? You might be surprised by the answer. And finally, a look at Greensboro, North Carolina's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which was created to put to rest the ghosts of one of that city's most violent, racially charged confrontations. But first, will the filibuster get a facelift? Since the mid-19th century, the filibuster, derived from the Dutch word for pirate, has been used in the Senate to delay or prevent the passage of a bill with majority support. It was used most famously, though unsuccessfully, by Strom Thurmond, who spoke for 24 hours and 18 minutes in an attempt to block the Civil Rights Act of 1957. During President George W. Bush's first term, Senate Democrats filibustered against 10 conservative judicial nominees, but apparently flexing his post-election political muscle, the president plans to renominate 7 of those 10, as well as 13 others. But this time, Senate Republicans have a plan to rewrite the filibuster rules, lowering the number of senators needed to end a filibuster from 3/5 or 60 votes to a simple majority, which would be 51 votes. Here to tell us more are Doug Kamek, professor of constitutional law at Pepperdine University and former head of the Office of Legal Counsel for President Reagan and the first President Bush. Welcome, Professor.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Tony.
And Washington, D.C. Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton, head of the Judicial Task Force for the Congressional Black Caucus. Congresswoman, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Doug, let's begin here. Democrats came out swinging when Republican senators recently suggested that rules be changed to close a filibuster. Even Republican Arlen Specter, chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, suggested that he would have preferred to have had some time in the 109th Congress to, as he said, cool the climate. Do you think that pushing this issue is a wise use of President Bush's so-called post-election political capital, or is it a line in the sand?
I certainly think it's an appropriate thing to address, and the Constitution provides that the Senate has the right to determine its own rules. And one of the unfortunate things that has been happening over the past several years with these filibusters is that the Senate has been using carryover rules from previous Senates, not giving new members of the Senate any opportunity to address whether or not a filibuster is appropriately applied to judicial nominations. It's quite unusual, quite extraordinary to apply the filibuster in that way, and it has a damaging effect on the separation of powers, on the independence of the judiciary, on the Senate's own ability to, as an entire body, consider nominees to use the filibuster to block the president's nominees in this way. So I think it is a question, Tony, that is appropriately addressed.
Congresswoman, if the filibuster rules change, who gets hurt? The GOP is in the majority now, but who's to say how long that will last? And would a Democratic majority, for example, still oppose such a rule change?
Well, the filibuster has been with us for the entire history of our Constitution. And the reason it's been with us is because the Senate has always understood that the filibuster rule does not favor either party. And therefore, it must be held. It must be held as a tool to be used. And I don't expect that this late in the history, the constitutional history is indeed of our country, that somehow or the other, the filibuster rule is going to be abandoned by either party. What? I expect that there will be Republicans who will think twice and maybe three times before voting to abandon the filibuster under any circumstances.
Well, let me follow with this. Are you saying that it is sacrosanct, or hasn't it been changed once before in the history of the Senate? Dropped in, I think, in 1975 from 67 votes down to 60? So is there a precedent for changing the rule already?
Sure, there's a precedent for changing the rule, and if you want to get two-thirds to change the rule, get two-thirds to change the rule, but you're not going to change the rule by majority vote.
What about that, Doug? How sacrosanct should this rule be because of its long history?
Well, there is not a long history, with all respect, of applying the filibuster rule to judicial nominations. It was only applied once before to a Supreme Court nomination, and it was only applied for a very brief period of time to address a very serious financial and political conflict of interest. That's the case of Abe Fortas. And it has almost never been applied in the context of appeals court nominations. It was threatened during the Clinton administration, but not successfully applied. So here to block 10 people altogether from being considered by the Senate of the United States when there is every indication that these 10 people would have majority support in the Senate, indeed they've received majority votes time and time again, and to say that the Constitution will not be followed is not only unprecedented, in my judgment, it's unconstitutional, so there's nothing sacrosanct about that. And I'm not the only one to have said that. Lloyd Cutler, the former White House counsel for President Carter and President Clinton, wrote a legal opinion to that effect, and it has good authority going all the way back to William Blackstone. So, as you point out, Tony, the Senate previously chose to reduce the vote needed with regard to closed debate under the filibuster rules. They can do so again.
Congresswoman, if the closure on filibuster is lowered, what would be the aftershocks, if any, with regard to using it elsewhere with legislation, for example? How significantly would things change if this, in fact, does go through?
Well, first, let me say this notion about it's never been used in judicial nominations, a kind of as-applied argument, ignores the fact that a filibuster is a filibuster, and there's no rule about when the filibuster will be used and when the filibuster will not be used. And as the professor says, it has indeed been used for Supreme Court nominations. Here, the aftermath here, of course, will is not meant to affect other uses of the filibuster. So to pick out one use of the filibuster as, quote, unconstitutional, who's going to declare it unconstitutional? Is the Senate going to go to court? The fact is that the Senate is the judge of its own rules, and the filibuster rule is going to stand or fall based on what the Senate says. It is a real outrage to hear from the Republican side the notion that these people should get to the floor and have an up-and-down vote. Compare the treatment of the Clinton judges, where the blue slip was used over and over again. There were no hearings at all on numerous judges. These judges who got no hearings at all, based on the views of usually one or two members of the Judiciary Committee, no less, were disproportionately black and Hispanic and women. What Clinton did was to go to the Senate, to the head of the Judiciary Committee, and vet nominees ahead of time, and they were almost always a moderate nominees, and yet one or two members, not of the entire sitting, of the Judiciary Committee, disproportionately stopped people of color and women, apparently on the assumption that despite their moderate records, that their experience as women, their life experience as people of color, might have predisposed them in a way that these one or two members of the Judiciary Committee did not abide. And here we hear that Bush's judges, which almost always got to the floor, a few of them filibustered, and somehow there's something terribly wrong with that, and the filibuster rule is unconstitutional. I say, says who?
Let's bring Doug in on this, because obviously the judicial nominees are at the bottom of this whole argument on filibustering. And you, Doug, have worked closely with both the Reagan and the first President Bush administrations. Why do you think this president is renominating so many candidates, particularly when the vast majority of his choices passed without a fight?
Well, I mean, the records on federal appellate judges for President Bush actually is quite unfavorable. President Carter got 93% of his nominees approved. President Bush, that is the current President Bush, got 69% of his nominees. And even worse than that, Tony, President Carter's nominees were considered in a timely fashion. just slightly more than 70 days. President Bush's nominees were considered for a period of over 263 days on average. There's obviously something, Congressman Holmes and I agree, there's something broken with the system, and I don't want to get involved in finger-pointing because there's been misbehavior on both sides. But the fact of the matter is that the filibuster, as applied to judicial nominees, has not been done in the past, and when it has been done, it has been very limited. It's been used here as a tool to cause great harm. It leaves our courts and our litigants shorthanded. They're not getting justice because of vacancies. It propagates the notion that ideology determines whether or not somebody is a proper judge. It prompts the need for temporary recess appointments, which I'm sure the Congresswoman and I agree brings instability to the court and causes a lack of independence in the judicial branch. And I agree with her. Some very good people are discouraged by the filibuster process. Miguel Estrada, a very talented Hispanic lawyer. Claude Allen, a public servant of African-American background. Carolyn Kuhl, a distinguished woman jurist out here in California where I'm at, all have dropped out of the process because of the extended delays and the unfortunate use of a filibuster against them when in each of their cases a majority of the Senate indicated that they would have approved their nomination if the matter could have been brought to the floor.
We have to stop there because our time has run out. I want to thank you both for being with us. Doug Kamek, professor of constitutional law at Pepperdine University and former head of the Office of Legal Counsel for President Reagan and the first President Bush, and Washington, D.C. Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton, who heads the Judicial Task Force for the Congressional Black Caucus. Again, thank you both for being with us.
Very good to be with you.